Hashem, 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 all glorious to the Son of the Virgin. All glorious to the Son of the Virgin. All glorious to the Son of the Virgin. All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glorious to Sri Gauranga. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So now we're going to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8. Prayers by Queen Kunti. Let us see which verse we will read. Can you hear at the back there? Brother Prema Bhakti, can you hear? Can you hear me? Are you sure? So anyway, what happened to the sound system?
It's working.
So we're going to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Prayers by Queen Kunti, Text 29. Navedikas chird Bhagavan Mustakir Shitam, Tavehama Nasya Ninam Vidambanam, Nayasya kas chird Dai Tosti Karhi chird, Dvesh Yash Chiyasmin Vishama Matir Ninam. O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human, and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's mercy upon the fallen souls is equally distributed. He has no one as the specific object of hostility. The very conception of the personality of Godhead as a human being is misleading. His pastimes appear to be exactly like a human being's, but actually they're transcendental and without any tinge of material contamination. He is undoubtedly known as partial to his pure devotees, but in fact, he is never partial, as much as the sun is never partial to anyone. By utilizing the sun rays, sometimes even the stones become valuable, whereas a blind man cannot see the sun, although there are enough sun rays before him. Darkness and light are two opposite conceptions, but this does not mean that the sun is partial in distributing its rays. The sun rays are open to everyone, but the capacities of the receptacles differ. Foolish people think that devotional service is flattering the Lord to get special mercy. Factually, the pure devotees who are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are not a mercantile community. A mercantile house renders service to someone in exchange for values. The pure devotee does not render service unto the Lord for such exchange, and therefore the full mercy of the Lord is open for him. Suffering men, needy men, inquisitive persons, or philosophers make temporary connections with the Lord to serve a particular purpose. When the purpose is served, there is no more relation with the Lord. A suffering man, if he is pious at all, prays to the Lord for his recovery. But as soon as the recovery is over, in most cases, the suffering man no longer cares to keep any connection with the Lord. The mercy of the Lord is open for him, but he is reluctant to receive it. That is the difference between a pure devotee and a mixed devotee. Those who are completely against the service of the Lord are considered to be in abject darkness. Those who ask for the Lord's favor only at the time of necessity are partial recipients of the mercy of the Lord. And those who are 100% engaged in the service of the Lord are full recipients of the mercy of the Lord. Such partiality in receiving the Lord's mercy is relative to the recipient, and it is not due to the partiality of the all-merciful Lord. When the Lord descends on this material world by his all-merciful energy, he plays like a human being, and therefore it appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees only. But that is not a fact. Despite such apparent manifestations of partiality, his mercy is equally distributed. In the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all persons who died in the fight before the presence of the Lord got salvation without the necessary qualification, because death before the presence of the Lord purifies the passing soul from the effects of all sins. And therefore the dying man gets a place somewhere in the transcendental abode. Somehow or other, if someone puts himself open in the sun rays, he is sure to get the requisite benefit, both by heat and by ultraviolet rays. Therefore the conclusion is that the Lord is never partial. It is wrong for the people in general to think of him as partial. Navedakaschid, Bhagavamaschakirashitam. Tavehamanasya Rinam Vidambana. Nayasya kaschid diatosti karhi chid dvesh yascha yasmin vishamam atir nina. O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. Om Gyana Chimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilatumyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chitamino Vishtam Stakasham Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Adantika Vanchitapa Charubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Adhidhanam Abhanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vidadha Shri Vasti Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So this chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam is entitled Prayers by Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti is very wonderful devotee. She is Lord Krishna's aunt. So she's very special devotee. And this chapter, in fact, there is one book you may have seen. Teachings of Queen Kunti. So there, that is some lectures by Prabhupada on some of these verses. So it is so important, actually, this chapter, what Queen Kunti is saying here. It's so important that one whole book, our BBT, Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, has dedicated one whole book to this. Just this one chapter. So it is very significant. And in these verses, Queen Kunti is praying. Very beautiful prayers. Each prayer, different prayers, addressing the Lord in different ways, and appealing for the Lord's mercy in different ways. So, this is one, there is a group of verses here, in this chapter, in which Queen Kunti is expressing in different ways how Krishna is inconceivable. Some people see him and think he is in one way, but then you find out he is in another way. Like in the next verse, Queen Kunti says that it is bewildering that you work although you are inactive. That you take birth, although you are the unborn. Things like this. The apparent contradictions are there with Lord Krishna. And Queen Kunti is pointing this out in these verses, and this particular verse, in this particular verse, Queen Kunti is pointing out how Lord Krishna's pastimes appear human. Therefore they are misleading, because they are not just ordinary pastimes. And in the Lord's activities, he may appear to be partial. Srila Prabhupada was focusing on this point in the purport, how Krishna may appear to be partial, but he is not really partial. He is not really true. Although it appears like that. Some people are getting more mercy. Some people getting a lot of mercy. Some people are getting less mercy, an average amount of mercy, if you could say that. I don't think you can, really. But anyway, some lesser amount of mercy. And some people, it appears, and it may be, they're really not getting any mercy at all. But actually, things... Anyway, it may appear like that. So, in this way, some people may think that Krishna is being unkind. Or, not unkind, but... Or may, including unkind, but partial. Kind to some, unkind to others, and like this. Not really fair. But here, Srila Prabhupada is explaining his points that Krishna, it is not like that. It is not like that at all. So, first of all, Lord Krishna's pastimes. His pastimes sometimes appear human, sometimes not. Sometimes, when Lord Krishna was present here on this planet, sometimes he would do things which were obviously human-like. Like, for example, he accepted Mother Yashoda as his mother, and he was acting like that. He was acting like, this is my mother. I am her son. This is actually the situation. And we know in the Damodar Leela that Mother Yashoda became angry with Krishna. Krishna was naughty. Krishna broke the churning pot and some of the butter containing pots, clay pots. Krishna broke some of these. And he had a tantrum. You wouldn't expect God to throw a tantrum and just to get totally carried away, would you? How could this be God if he just loses control of himself and starts smashing things? But this is Krishna's pastime, in which he appears to be human. Little children do things like this. Yes, little children sometimes throw tantrums. And we may even get a demonstration in the course of our program. We may call on one of our children, or they may just volunteer to show us what a tantrum is like. Anyway, actually they're glorious little devotees. So Krishna, he just threw a tantrum. So in this way, Queen Kunti says, your pastimes appear human, but then sometimes they don't appear to be human. Mother Yashoda was approached by Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram told Mother Yashoda that Krishna just ate some dirt. They had been playing. There was some childish play going on. Some competition, something like that. And Lord Balaram lost. He lost. He got disturbed. And he thought, how can I get back on Krishna? I want to teach him a lesson. So he went to Mother Yashoda and said, Jassi Mata, Krishna ate some dirt. And immediately Krishna was in trouble. He was in big trouble. Mother Yashoda came and told Krishna, you open your mouth, let me look. So, eating dirt, I guess sometimes some children may do that. You don't do that. No, you don't do that. But apparently some children may. So that is ordinary. We know little children, there are different platforms of life. Anamaya, I forget them all. What is it? Anamaya, Pranamaya, Jnanamaya, Vijnanamaya, and so on, up to Anandamaya. First is Anamaya. Anamaya means that the ultimate reality is manifest in the form of food. Yes, and the manifest form of that is that small children, if something looks interesting, what do? Put it in the mouth. That's the test it has to pass. If it doesn't pass that test, useless. Throw it away. So sometimes children, they may put some silly things in their mouths. Yes. And sometimes they may even endanger their lives by doing that. So Mother Yashoda became concerned and asked Krishna to open his mouth. She didn't ask him, actually. She told him, "You open your mouth." Krishna had to, because you have to do what your mother says, right? Yeah, sort of. That's how old you are. Well, when you're that age, you have to do what your mother says, otherwise you could really be in big trouble. So Krishna opened his mouth, just like an ordinary little child. And Mother Yashoda looked in to see if there was dirt there, but she didn't see dirt. She saw the whole universe. All the planetary systems and everything. Essentially, she saw more or less the same thing that Arjuna saw in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, something very much like that at least. But because she is on a higher level than Arjuna, then she was not so devastated, so overwhelmed by that vision. So she saw in Krishna's mouth, there are all the different planets and stars and so on. Then she saw, oh, there's the Earth planet. Then she saw, oh, there's me. And there's Krishna. She saw the whole universe in Krishna's mouth. So that, of course, is superhuman. Very superhuman. Indeed. So people, sometimes they become bewildered. They become bewildered by these different pastimes of Krishna, which are sometimes human, sometimes not human, and sometimes you can understand basically, sometimes it's bewildering. Just like one famous sort of politician in recent Indian history. He liked Bhagavad Gita so much. He loved Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna's more difficult pastimes, like Krishna's Rasa Leela dance, he couldn't relate with that. He thought this is sort of some sort of degraded activity. So he thought that means there are two Krishnas. And even in India now, there are certain schools of thought who think that there were two Krishnas. One was the philosopher Krishna, and the other was some king or prince Krishna. And that they're two people, of course they're not. So that famous politician, he said that if my Krishna who spoke Bhagavad Gita and the Krishna who danced in the Rasa dance, if the two of them are actually the same person, then he said, I will immediately give up being a Hindu, he said. Because as far as he's concerned, this is intolerable. And the Krishna who danced in the Rasa dance, if the two of them are actually the same person, then he said, I will immediately give up being a Hindu, he said. Because as far as he's concerned, this is intolerable. He couldn't handle that at all. So, Krishna, his pastimes sometimes they're quite easy to digest because they are human-like. Other times they may be bewildering. Krishna just decides to act independently. So of course, for the non-devotees, this is very bewildering. And therefore, amongst the non-devotees, it is very rare to find people who understand Krishna. It's very rare. And amongst the non-devotees, you won't find people who understand Krishna. Only the devotees can enter into this mystery. Lord Krishna makes that point in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Saivaya maya tejya yoga prakta paratana. Vaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam hyetad utama. Lord Krishna said that because you are my devotee and my friend, I'm going to explain the supreme science to you, and you will be able to enter into this mystery because you're my devotee and friend. Just like Krishna says, Tesham sadati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam didami buddhi yogam tam yena maam upiyantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Otherwise, Queen Kunti herself says, what is that? Maya javani kachanam agyad bhuksajam avyayam na lakshya se mudha drisha natyo natyad haro yata. That you are invisible to the foolish observer. Something like that. Yes, what is that? Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So Lord Krishna, he does these things, sometimes acting in ways that we can relate with, sometimes acting in other ways altogether that ordinary people just cannot relate with. So actually he is doing that. That is all going on. That is display of his yoga maya potency. Yeah. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. Mudo yam nabijana ti. Naham tebyo managapi. Something like that. Krishna says that I am never revealed to the mudhas, to the foolish people. For them I'm always covered by the yogamaya potency, deluding potency. But for the devotees, these apparent contradictions, they're not difficult things for the devotees to deal with. But rather for the devotees, when they see these apparently contradictory standards in Krishna's activities, then the devotees, they don't become bewildered and doubt Krishna, but they feel this is very glorious. Just see how wonderful Krishna is, that he is doing things like this. Just like, you know, one of my favorite stories, I'm sure you're familiar with, the story of Narada Muni with the cobbler. You know that story? Okay. That story applies. Okay? So. Perhaps I can recite it a little for those of you who didn't follow. You know, someone told me a joke once that there was a comedy club which jokers were members of. But there are so many jokes, they got so used to them, that what they did, they numbered the jokes. So someone would get up and say, number 49! Everyone would roar with laughter. Because they'd remember the joke. One day, someone got up and said, number 1503 or something. People were sort of looking at each other. But two people
We're rolling on the air, completely, totally devastated. And this one chap who was, you know, amongst the many who were just looking around, wondering what was going on, he asked them, well, what's happening? And one of the fellows said, oh, he told it so nicely. And the other one said, I've never heard that one before. Anyway, sorry, that was a little diversion. I saw some of you were getting diverted. But I get your attention. So the story of the cobbler and the Brahmin applies. You see? Yes. Anyway, I'll tell you the story a little bit. That Narada Muni was on his way to Vaikuntha. He met one cobbler. In the Vedic system, cobblers, people who deal with leather, they're not really considered very high in the social scale. Actually, they're considered quite low, in fact. So he's a very humble type of person, in other words, simple type of person. So Narada went by, and that cobbler stopped him and said, oh, you're Narada Muni. Don't tell me you're going to see Lord Narayan. When you see him, can you ask him, when will I go back to Godhead? Will I ever go? Please ask him. He was a very nice devotee, actually, that cobbler. So Narada said, sure. On he went, he met one Brahmin, one big pundit, like Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu, but no, different. He's also a nice devotee. But this pundit, he was just some puffed up scholar, kind of impersonalist, or not maybe impersonalist, but you know, very proud and so on. So he saw Narada and he said, oh, you don't tell me you're going to see Lord Narayan. Would you mind asking him, when will I go back to Godhead? I've been waiting so long. How long do I have to wait anyway? Anyway, I know it won't be long, but just find out so I can prepare myself. Will it be next week or 2 weeks or maybe even as long as a month? But I'd just like to know. So Narada said, sure, and he went. And he met Lord Narayan, and he asked Lord Narayan, and Lord Narayan said, well, that cobbler, he's such a nice devotee. He's very humble, very simple, unassuming. He said, Lord Narayan said, you can tell him. He'll come back to me at the end of this lifetime. But that Brahmin, oh, that Brahmin, he is such a puffed up, arrogant rascal, that even though I'm God, I don't know when he's coming back. You can just tell him it'll be a long time. So Lord Narayan told Narada that if you are wondering why I'm saying like this, then it will become apparent to you if, when after you have told these people these things, if you then tell them that when you saw me, I was busy threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. See how they react, and then you'll understand why I have said what I have said about their coming back to God. So Narada went back, and first of all, he met the Brahmin. The Brahmin said, oh, you're back. Good. So you tell me now, when did the Lord say that I'm going back? Will it be later today? Tomorrow? I know it'll be very soon, but just tell me anyway. Narada said, well, you know, I'm just terribly sorry, but Lord Narayan said that it's going to be a long time. In fact, he said that even though he's God, he doesn't really know. So I'm sorry about that. And the Brahmin said, what? That's crazy. I'm so qualified. Look at me. I'm just exuding qualification. So this is nonsense. You can't say that. You don't know what you're talking about. I don't even believe you've been to see Lord Narayan. If you've been to see Lord Narayan, you tell me, what was he doing when you saw him? And Narada remembered, he said, oh yes, that's right. When I saw Lord Narayan, he was busy threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmin said, what? An elephant through the eye of a needle? That is rubbish. You never went to see Lord Narayan. You are just lying. You just get out of here, threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Just get out. So then, Narada, he went to the cobbler, who was busy mending the shoes, and like this, humble soul, chanting the holy names while doing his humble work. He was so happy to see Narada, and he asked, so what did the Lord say? Did he say that I would ever go back to Godhead? Narada said, actually, the Lord told me himself that you will go back to him at the end of this very lifetime. And the cobbler was so ecstatic, he was dancing uncontrollably. Then Narada said, oh, just wait a minute, one other point. Just one thing. Do you know that when I was with the Lord, you know what he was doing? He was busy threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. What do you think of that? And the cobbler started dancing even more. He became even more ecstatic. And Narada said, do you believe me? Doesn't that sound, you know, like too much? And the cobbler said, no, for my Lord, that's nothing. That's just small display of his wonderful potency. He's so glorious, he's so wonderful. And Narada asked him, well, but how are you able to digest this? How can you deal with this idea? And that cobbler said that he picked up one banyan seed pod. So there are different banyan trees, and some of these big banyan trees, they have big aerial roots, and they grow, they become very extraordinary plants. So they have like a sort of a nut. And in it, there are many seeds. There are many seeds inside this little thing. So, the cobbler picked up one of these things. And he opened it up and he showed Narada, look. In this little seed pod, there are hundreds of seeds. Each one of them can grow into a tree, big banyan tree, which is as big as 10 elephants, or bigger. And there are hundreds of them in this little container. So if my Lord can put hundreds of huge banyan trees in this little thing, then to put an elephant through the eye of a needle, that's nothing. That's child's play. So you see, it is not when we say that the Lord's pastimes are sometimes human, sometimes superhuman, the materialistic people, they may be able to relate to the human-like ones, but not the others like that. Then, we say that the devotees enjoy both types of pastimes. Not just the human-like ones, and not just the superhuman ones. The devotees relish all of the pastimes. And it is not that when it comes to the very fantastic pastimes that the devotees just turn a blind eye to it and just, you know, don't become doubtful, they just blindly accept. It's not like that. But just as in this example of Narada Muni with the cobbler and the Brahmin, so we could see how that cobbler was given the intelligence by Krishna to actually understand the Lord's superhuman pastimes. So you see, this is how it works for the devotees. So when there are apparent contradictions, for the non-devotees it's bewildering, they lose touch, and they just lose, they cannot understand Krishna. But when there are contradictions for the devotees, when the devotees see these apparent contradictions, then it just makes everything more wonderful. Then the devotees just appreciate Krishna even more. So like this, Queen Kunti is saying, and then she goes on to say, to talk about how Krishna never favors anyone or he never dislikes anyone. And Srila Prabhupada gives very important example to illustrate the principle here. Can any of you remember the example that Srila Prabhupada gives to illustrate how Krishna is not favoring one person and being envious of another person or neglecting? Can any of you remember? Mother Prema Bhakti, can you remember? Can anyone remember? Yes.
I know it's slightly wrong, but it may be of the moon, chandelier, and even the crooked light.
Haridas Thakur Prabhu has suggested that there's a saying that the moon shines even in the eye of the crooked man. Well, the principle is correct, but it's not the exact example that Prabhupada gives here.
He uses the example of the sun.
Yes, Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the sun. You may go outside. Today was a nice sunny day, most of the time. So you might go outside, you're in the sun, and you'll feel the heat and so on. Or you may be just like, say, under the little shelter here, where you can still feel the warmth, but it's not the same as being right in the sun. Or you might even be down in the cellar with the door closed in the dungeon. You don't have a dungeon. I was in Italy a little while ago. We went to the Duke's palace in Venice, and they showed us the dungeons. That was pretty austere. Yeah. Pretty austere. So you might be in a dungeon today, with the roof closed over your head, and you might be in total darkness, and it might be cold down there. So, but it might be even today, like today, such quite a bright day. So, in these terms, in terms of getting the mercy or feeling, experiencing the potency of the sun, it is a question of the recipient. It is not a question of the sun being partial in any way. But some people will go out into the sun. Some people will be just on the edge somewhere. And some other people may turn their backs and go away into darkness. So it is not a question of what is the sun doing. It is a question of what we are doing. Otherwise, Krishna is giving his mercy He's giving his mercy unlimitedly. He's willing to give. But just some people want, and some people want less. Some people really want. Some want less, and some don't want. Yes, it's like this. So we should always understand in these terms. Srila Prabhupada explains that example in practical Krishna conscious terms. That if you are a bit of a demon, now you're all devotees, if you just happen to be a bit of a demon, one of them, then, you know, you're anti-God, you don't want to serve God, you don't want to know about Him, you'd rather avoid Him. So then, don't worry, you won't get any mercy. God will not bother you by coming along and offering you some mercy. If you are kind of in between, then Prabhupada says here that someone who may ask the Lord's favor only at the time of necessity, yeah, that type of person, Prabhupada is saying, is in between. Normally they just carry on, they're not so worried about God. But if there's some special circumstances, then suddenly they turn around, oh, please help me God. Yes. There's a saying you may have heard, that you'll never find an atheist in a foxhole. This is a saying from World War I. My grandfather, who was in the trenches, told me. Foxhole means that you have this battlefield and the armies are facing each other in the trenches. Every now and then they come running across and they attack each other or try to. But then they're running out in the open, they're exposed. And it's extremely dangerous. But in the middle, there are some holes made by bombs. When they fire the big artillery, then it may explode and there's a hole. So they run from hole to hole. Those holes are called foxholes. So the saying was, my grandfather told me, you never find an atheist in a foxhole. Means, you know, they're running, bullets are flying. Just such a horrible situation. Then they see a foxhole, they just dive in. And then, oh God, something like that. So you never find an atheist in a foxhole. Later on, when they're in the bar, you know, on the day off, then they may tell you, yes, there I was running across the battlefield, I wasn't scared. Something like that. Tales of heroics. But out on the battlefield, no, it was, oh God. Yeah, something like that. So you get the atheists. Then you get this type of people, this type of person who's in between. And then you get the pure devotees. Of course, there are grades in between also. But these, just to help us understand, these three very clear-cut examples are given. Just like someone told me another joke. This is a little more Krishna conscious. There was one little boy, and he was like many little boys, probably not like our devotees, maybe like some of them. He was a bit naughty, and he was a bit, you know, he'd try and take advantage of his mother and get things. You know, at the shops he would throw a bit of a fit until he got a sweet. Anyway, one day this boy, he decided he wanted a bicycle. So yeah, he said to his mother, can I have a bicycle? His mother said, look, your birthday was just a few months ago, and we gave you some nice things then. We can't just give you things all the time. Why don't you wait? So the child, he threw a bit of a fit, but the mother said, no, I just can't do it. We don't have the money. So the boy asked, well, what should I do then? She said, well, why don't you just pray to God? So He went into his room. He knelt down and he started praying. Dear God, I have been a very good little boy. Please give me a bicycle. Then he thought, actually, you know, I wasn't so good. Then he said, well, actually, God, I tried to be a good boy some of the time. Please give me a bicycle. Then he thought a little further, and he realized that actually he'd been a pretty horrible little boy, really. So he said, dear God, I'll try to be a good boy in the future. Please give me a bicycle. And he was sort of looking around, waiting for the bicycle. Didn't come. Next day, he went to church. He was a Catholic. They have statues. I don't know if you've been in a Catholic church. Like our deities, something like that. So this little boy, he went into the church. He was checking things out. Then he saw one statue of Mother Mary, Christ's mother. He looked around. No one was around. He grabbed the statue and ran. Then he went back home and he wrote a note. Dear Jesus, if you want your mother back, you better give me a bicycle. Signed, you know who. You see, this is called impure, mixed devotional service. Yes, anyway. So the thing is, if we want Krishna's mercy, then we have to try to advance towards pure devotional service. The more we progress towards pure devotional service, the more mercy we'll get from Krishna. Yes. But if we are just demanding, come on Krishna, give me some mercy. Why are you not giving me mercy? Then Krishna, he may wait until you calm down a bit, till you get a little more cool-headed or a little more in the right frame of mind. So therefore, we should try to do like this. Krishna is very merciful, very kind to his devotees. In Bhagavad Gita, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that it is just like parents who have a number of children, but some of the children have grown up, they've become independent, they've gone away, they're doing their own thing, they may come every now and then visit the parents for a while, but actually they're just doing their own thing. So the parents, they care, but it's not that they will go out of their way and do so many things for that child, for those children who have become independent. But then there may be the one little child who is completely dependent